Hi, and welcome to the Google Cloud Platform podcast. I'm Francis Campoy, a developer advocate for the Google Cloud Platform, and I'm here with my colleague, Mark.
Hi, I'm Mark Mandel. I'm also a developer advocate for the Google Cloud Platform, and it's another episode of our podcast.
Yeah, very excited about it. So, I guess that most of you have heard the first episode. Just a little bit of a summary of what we talked about. Basically, we have a podcast and there's three parts of it. Cool thing of the week, the main content, and the question of the week.
Yep.
So before we start with the cool thing of the week, what are we going to be talking about today?
In the main content?
Yeah, in the main content.
Okay, so the main content, we want to talk about compute as a continuum.
Cool.
Which is kind of the spectrum of what we can do on cloud platforms. I think it's kind of interesting, and hopefully everyone will too.
Nice. I really like that you're using continuum and spectrum. It sounds very,
very, sounds very fancy.
It's very scientific. Yeah. Everything is very scientific. Cool. What about the cool thing of the week?
All right. I'm pretty excited about the cool thing of the week. I got to have the chance to collaborate with a very, very well-known fellow by the name of Ilya Gregorik. We got to put a blog post out on the Google Cloud Platform blog.
Nice.
All about HTTP2 and what Google Cloud Platform does to enable HTTP2. You can read the whole full article, but I think the really big takeaway, which is really cool, is basically we kind of just do it for you.
Yeah.
So really, if you want HTTP2, put an HTTPS load balancer on it, and that's pretty much all you need. As long as it goes through HTTPS, we do HTTP2. If you're an App Engine customer and you go through HTTPS, you get HTTP2. So you just get a speed boost, which is awesome, without really having to do much work.
Cool. And for those that don't know what HTTP2 is, I mean, HTTP2, yeah, the version 2 of HTTP.
It's better!
Sure. But why is it better?
So that is an excellent question.
So, I know that one of the things is it's way faster because it's able to basically the server rather than having to cache on the client every single time, the server is able to predict what you're going to ask for and just send you stuff.
So it can do preloading, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So it can send stuff in advance. It tends to use like a single connection, so you can do streaming a lot better.
Nice.
So we used to do tricks before with HTTP1 where you'd like get like sharded across different domains and do all those sort of fancy
tricks. Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that sort of stuff as much anymore too.
Cool.
It does really neat stuff. It's well worth looking at the spec. It's not particularly long.
Yeah,
it's pretty neat stuff.
I also heard one of the things that I like the least from web development, which is when you have to put all the images inside of one single image.
Image sprites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so painful to do. Yeah, basically, it's not needed anymore.
Yeah, it makes things a whole lot easier.
So yeah, that's really cool. And I really like that, the fact that you can basically forget about HTTP2, just know that it's going to be there for you. You just need to put a load balancer before and that's it.
That's pretty cool. It's actually really cool in that we sort of have experimentations in there for quick support on some platforms too.
Nice.
Which is also very cool. Which is a UDP streaming type of protocol that some browsers support.
Yeah, Quick is kind of magic.
Yeah, it's magic. I don't know how
it just makes everything faster, right? I don't really know how.
It's special magic.
Yeah. Cool. That's a cool thing of the week. Little reminder to you, to our listeners. If you have something cool that you want
to
share.
Love to have it.
Yeah, let us know. At the end of the podcast, we'll repeat all the ways you can contact us.
Brilliant.
Okay, so for the main content, the compute as a continuum.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. So, like, actually, you had a really good metaphor for this. I think I really like it. I actually really like it. I kind of want to start there with the metaphor you had.
Okay, so basically, for the compute options we have, basically, you can say you have the infrastructure as a service or IaaS. Or whatever you pronounce it, I'm very bad at pronouncing that. You have also platform as a service, PaaS or PaaS.
Yeah.
And then there's something in the middle we'll discuss about later.
Now. Yep.
And I was thinking how to make the difference between both. And I'm European, and in Europe, other than being just in general better, we also have manual cars.
We have those in Australia as well.
Yeah, but you drive on the wrong side of the road.
In America, they call them stick shifts.
Oh wow! Okay,
yes.
So we have stick shifts then, and I was thinking about the difference between PaaS and IaaS as driving a manual car or a stick shift and an automatic car. But then I realized that actually that's kind of wrong. It could be more like when you have infrastructure service, you're driving a manual car.
Yep.
When you have PAS, it's basically you are in a self-driving car.
Yeah. I actually really, really kind of like this because, okay, so infrastructure as a service is really like, it's your infrastructure. It's like you're spinning up VMs. Like you get just basic machines, nothing on them. It's totally up to you how you want to drive, how you want to like do stuff.
Yeah.
If stuff goes down, it's on you, all that sort of stuff. So like being in a manual car, if you want to change gears, you have to do it.
Yeah.
You want to go faster or slower, you have to brake, you know, it's kind of, you know, if you've been given a car and it's up to you to go forward, and at the same time, you could totally mess up your gearbox if you do it wrong.
Yes.
Like, and that's on you. That's
I might have done that before. Yes.
I may have done similar things. But then, like, I really like the idea is, like, platform as a service where you say to the car, like, if you've got a self-driving car, you're like, hey, I want to go to the shops. Take me to the shops. And the car decides the route you want to take. It decides how it wants to get there, how fast to drive, you know, avoiding obstacles. And so on platform as a service, you don't have as much control. But it's like, well, now I can just get to where I need to go, and I don't have to do a whole bunch of other stuff, such as, like, infrastructure tasks or security as much or things like that. So I actually really like that metaphor.
And actually following the metaphor a little bit deeper, you can also have the thing that like when you need to learn how to drive a self-driving car, well, that's it. Like you just get in the self-driving car and it's like, drive me to the store. That's it. Learning how to drive a stick shift, well, that's a little bit more time. So it's kind of similar, right? Like when you are a platform as a service, everything you need to know is what you want to do. That's it.
Yeah.
When you have infrastructure as a service, you're going to have to decide on what OS you want to run, what libraries you're going to be using, how do you secure your network.
How do you log it? How do you monitor it? Make sure it stays up. Yeah. All that sort of fun stuff.
So yeah, I really like that metaphor. Yeah.
I think that worked really well. I really like it.
So how do we offer those things in Google Cloud Platform?
So infrastructure as a service, we have Google Compute Engine. So we can fire up virtual machines. You have a variety of operating systems. So Debian, Ubuntu, we even offer Windows if that's your flavor of choice. And a few others as well. We have a list online which shows you which ones of ours are supported and how much so. We do CoreOS, we do all sorts of stuff. But they're basic machines. We put some stuff in them to make them a little bit more secure, and ability to like SSH into them really easily. But that's it. They're machines. You can do what you like. Any extra details I might have missed? And
not really. I mean, it's basically you just get virtual machines and you do whatever you want to them. So you can SSH, do apt-get install. You can mess around. You can break your machine down basically, and then just delete it and create a new one if you want to.
Probably most interesting. We can do like up to 32 cores. We can do SSD disks.
Yeah, and there's all the networking parts, load balancers as we mentioned before, and so on. So there's basically like, if you walk into a data center, like an ideal data center, where you can just say, I want more and more machine here, and now I want to connect them with this cable. That's basically what you do.
Yep. And you can use all your provisioning tools, Ansible, Chef, Puppet, all that sort of fun
stuff. Yeah, there's also all the monitoring that comes directly from it, so you can see how often the machine has been used. Like, there's a lot of things going on, but it's basically just basic components of virtual machines that you manage.
We do make some things a bit easier. Our monitoring service kind of hooks in automatically with our machines, so that's one thing you don't necessarily manage. But so that, I mean, that's infrastructure as a service. That's Compute Engine. You know, we can spin up VMs.
Yep.
So all the way on the other side, platform as a service. What have we got there?
So platform as a service is one of my favorite products. I use it all the time. It's Google App Engine.
Woo!
And what Google App Engine does basically is like this idea of self-driving car. You write your code, you just put it there, and that's it. Like, you don't need to manage anything else. You don't know how many instances are running. They just like enough instances to run the traffic you're getting. That's it. So it's really easy to get started, but also it scales very well. We talked about it a little bit last
the previous episode.
Yeah, because the Google Cloud Platform podcast is actually hosted on App Engine. But it's so simple to use. Like you have, huge players like Rovio with Angry Birds. They use that and it just works very well. So basically the good thing is that you're giving a little bit of the flexibility that you have with infrastructure as a service. So you cannot run everything you want. You have like a series of allowed runtimes. So you have Go, of course. You have Java. You have Python and PHP.
Yes.
And then that's pretty much it. Like, there's some limitations on how you can access the network and things like that. But it's kind of easy to adapt any application to it, but you still have to adapt it.
It's worth noting though, like, you can't run your own custom code on there. You can't write, you know, you can't write to the file system. You'd have to go through out some of our storage. Requests can't take longer than 60 seconds.
Yeah.
There's stuff like that. And that's kind of the way it's built.
Yeah. I mean, the limitations, for instance, the fact that you can write to the file system, it's actually a very good best practice, right? Because if you try to do that on a single machine and that machine goes down, you just lost the data.
Sure.
So for a web server, it's actually a good practice. So basically, we're trying to enforce the best practices for web development. So then once you're doing that, we can make sure that your code will scale to whatever traffic you're getting.
Yeah, it means we can do things that make things easier internally to be able to scale and do stuff like that. But much like your self-driving car, you can't be like, oh, actually, we need to go faster or take this, you know, shortcut or something like that.
Yeah.
From my very specific instance, it's like, no, the self-driving car is going to get you there the way you want it. It's going to get you there.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it's most of the time, it's basically what you want.
Yeah.
For me, by default, I will develop stuff for App Engine.
Yep.
And if I get to some point where I want to run something like FFmpeg or Image Magic or things like that, which won't run on App Engine, then I will spawn a Compute Engine instance on the infrastructure service side. And you can have both and make them communicate together. So you can get both the best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So speaking of best of both worlds, fantastic segue. We were talking a little bit before about how we can have stuff that sort of sits in between infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. And I think we have a couple of offerings that are available there.
Yeah, so that's the good thing that the word continuum implies indeed. Yeah, so we have both ends, infrastructure as a service on one side, platform as a service on the other.
Yep.
What's in between?
So we have a couple of things. I mean, we just talked about App Engine, and falling under that banner, we have something that's called Managed VMs.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Which I think is actually really cool. Managed VMs pretty much lets you kind of sit in the App Engine world where we manage things for you, but allows you to, I hate to use the term, but it actually makes sense, like break the glass ceiling, to be able to break through and say, okay, I actually want to be able to either run my own runtimes or write my own code the way I want to write it, and, you know, and take longer than 60 seconds, things like that. But I'm willing to give up a little bit in terms of, you know, either the management side. So
yeah,
it pretty much, we've got some, we've got Ruby support on there. I have to actually remember
Node.js. Yeah.
A few other ones I can't think of off the top of my head right now. And you can also provide your own Docker files as well. So you can bring your own custom runtimes if you want. And there's ways you can do that.
And that the good thing about it is that we've also been working on the fact that now you can deploy to manage VMs without having to install Docker on your own machines. So basically, you just give the code and we'll build it and deploy it. So the developer experience is, it's quite similar to App Engine. It's pretty good. You just write your code and send it.
Yeah, and it's meant to be very close. So you can also still write like Java and Python and PHP and Go, much like you would before. So if you have an existing App Engine app, and you're like, you know what, for this particular bit of my code, I actually need to break out. Maybe I need FFmpeg, like you were mentioning before, things like that. I can still have the infrastructure that I'm used to with App Engine, but I can kind of go that little bit further and be like, oh, I have a container, so I can put whatever I like in it. And that's really powerful stuff. I really like it.
So yeah, basically that's just going a little bit in the direction of infrastructure service, but definitely next to platform as a service.
Yeah.
It's very platform as a service
thing.
Yeah. Do we have something in the middle? The answer is, of course, yes.
Of course we do. We have something, I think, a little bit further more towards the infrastructure as a service side, but still in that sort of platform as a service.
Yeah, that's Kubernetes, which I love the name.
So I have a tendency to say Kubernetes. I think it's just because I'm Australian. I don't know why.
I mean, it's a Greek word anyway, so I don't think that neither of somebody, us is pronouncing it.
You know
it.
What? Somebody should definitely send us a phonetic sounding, someone who has a Greek background. I think
that
sounds
that'd
great.
Be nice. That'd be nice.
We'll play it. I think we should play it. So yeah, so Kubernetes is an open source project that was first started by Google. We could talk about this for an entire episode.
Oh, yeah.
I think we'll get some people on. I've got some interviews, definitely.
That could be a nice episode, too, yeah.
But what we have is a hosted version called Google Container Engine, which is essentially hosted Kubernetes. Kubernetes is really, really cool. The way I like to explain it really quickly is basically, so it's really a container orchestration service.
Yeah.
And the way I like to think of it is containers are great, right? And we can go on with them for a while. But what do you do when you're like, I need 5 of these type and 10 of these type and I need 6 of these type. I need to make sure that this one can talk to that one and this one talks to that one and these two always get started up together and that sort of stuff. That's what Kubernetes does. So it's a scheduling service to make sure that, hey, yep, I've got 5 running of this. I've got 6 running of that. I've got 10 running of these. And if a machine blows up or a pod or a Docker container goes down, then it starts it back up again. It says, oh, wait, that's gone down. Sweet. And what's cool about it, which I quite like, is sort of the ubiquity of containers. Doesn't really matter what's running inside them. Doesn't matter. Kubernetes can just do it in a very standard way for all sorts of different types of software applications. So I kind of like it.
Yeah. Just to give a more concrete example, something that I'd seen, for instance, is you have like the hello world of distributed systems, which is basically the guestbook with the database that moves around. I really like that example because basically what you're saying is like, well, you have the web servers and then you also have the database, right? When you have those web servers, maybe you want to scale like the web server container, you want to scale it over and you're just like, oh, I had one container doing that.
Yeah.
Now I want to have 10 of those. And maybe you have 5 hosts, 5 actual machines running that, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want those 10 containers running all of them in that one single machine. So you want to say, oh yeah, just distribute across. And that's what Kubernetes will do. If one of those 5 machines goes down, those 2 containers will just move somewhere else. That's it. So basically it's the idea of you describe what you want to have running. That's what we call the declarative approach, where you don't say what to do when something goes wrong. You just say, this is what I want. Do everything you need to make that.
Yeah. So you still have the ability to kind of drive the car, but there's some self-driving aspects to it.
It's
really in that middle, isn't it?
Yeah. I kind of like to think about it. It's like you basically self-driving car where you basically saying, you know what? I actually want to go through these streets and I need to avoid that part. And so it's more like, very detailed self-driving.
Yeah, sort of like lane assist or self-parking or something like that.
Yeah.
Just to go into that metaphor.
Yeah, at some point that metaphor will break, I'm sure, but whatever. But yeah, that's Kubernetes. And Kubernetes, basically what it does is it's just that. Orchestrate containers across a fleet of machines. Those machines can be running on Google Cloud Platform, on Google Container Engine.
Yep.
They could also be running somewhere else. They could be running on your own premises. They could be running anywhere else. What Google Container Engine is, it's just Kubernetes. The whole thing is managed by one master. So what we're doing with Kubernetes is giving you an easy way to spawn those instances that you need to run the containers. And then one extra instance, which is what we call a Kubernetes master, that is managed by us. So we make sure that machine will never go down.
Yeah, that's the important one.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy. I mean, it's pretty awesome. You can kind of go to the developer console, click a button, how many nodes do you want? I'd like 5, please. And you click OK, and it spins it all up and creates it for you, which is pretty cool.
It's a very good experience. I really like it.
Yeah. I really, really like it, too.
The good thing, I mean, we should definitely do an episode on Kubernetes, because there's really cool things.
There's so many cool things. Okay, so sort of to recap, I guess. So on one side of the spectrum, we have like platform as a service. So we've got App Engine. And then as we continue a little bit further towards infrastructure as a service, we have managed VMs.
Yeah.
We continue a little bit further towards infrastructure as a service. So we've got a Container Engine.
And Kubernetes.
And Kubernetes. Yep. And then we go all the way on the other side, infrastructure as a service. We've got Compute Engine.
Yep.
So that's the continuum, really.
That's it. Yeah.
That seems pretty cool. So really, like, whatever you want to build, we should have a solution for you. And hopefully we can help you along the way as well with some of our tools.
Yeah, I think that basically the good thing is that there's some solutions that will work very well for infrastructure service and some other things platform service, some other things more like Kubernetes. But the good thing is that you can use all of them at the same time.
Exactly.
There's nothing that forces you to go with one. You can just pick and choose.
Pick and choose.
Yeah.
Lovely. All right. I think that sounds really great.
Cool. So for the last part of the podcast,
we have
question of the week.
Yeah, we have a question of the week. So this seemed to be around like someone's trying to SSH into their machine from their laptop, from like a terminal command.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is an interesting one. So they know their details are correct. So I'm sitting at my machine and I know my password and my credentials are all set up correctly. But every time I SSH in, it keeps dropping my connection and I'm really confused about what's going on.
Yeah. So that happened to me once.
Yeah.
It was quite painful because, I mean, if you know Linux enough,
yeah,
probably you know exactly what's the answer. I'm not a Linux expert, so it got me confused a little bit for a while.
So I like to think I'm a Linux expert. I've been using Linux for a long time, but I actually didn't know the answer to this at all. So I thought this was actually really interesting.
Yeah. So basically, if you try every single time you try to SSH or actually to connect in any way to a compute engine instance.
Yep.
There's going to be a log going on somewhere. We're going to manage, like, just in case we want to measure if someone is trying to attack you, these kind of things.
It's security stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah. So if you're running Ubuntu,
yeah,
by default, you have this little program called SSH Guard. I'm not sure that I'm pronouncing correctly.
But SSH Guard. I think that sounds okay. Between the two of us.
SSH Guard, something like that. And what SSH Guard does is every single time there's a connection event, so as someone is staging into it, we'll measure the dangerousness of the connection.
So like how risky it is.
How
like,
risky it is.
Seems a little bit strange.
Yeah. And the thing is that when you're connecting from your laptop, turns out that very often there's some DNS settings going on, and basically your laptop appears as something slightly risky. For that instance.
Okay.
Doesn't mean it's completely risky, but you know, it doesn't really trust it.
Okay.
So it gives a dangerousness of 10, which is a completely random number to choose. But the thing is that once you get over 40, then you get banned. So that's why you may be able to connect once, twice, three times. And the fourth time, your connection is dropped. And the only error message you get is your connection is dropped.
So is that like you're reconnecting a lot over a short period?
Basically, yeah.
After a while, it sort of
after
goes
a
down.
While it goes down. But
okay.
Yeah. So what's the solution for that? Well, the first thing you need to do is you need to make sure that that's actually the problem.
Yeah.
Maybe your network is not broken and you're not able to connect. So that could be. So how do you connect when you cannot SSH into a machine? Well, what is going on is that your IP has been banned, right? But you can still connect using the console. Like from the console, you have the SSH button.
Yep.
That will work every single time.
Okay. So Google Cloud Platform knows for compute and SSH, if it's doing it through the browser, it's like, oh, that's special.
Yeah.
We know that's great.
We know who you are. You're using a private key identification. Yeah. So it's different.
So you're probably logged in with two-factor auth because we're all using two-factor auth when we use our Google accounts.
We all should. Yeah.
And so, we trust that connection a lot.
Yeah. So that's the thing. That will always work. Then once you connect in there, you can do IP tables dash capital L.
Yep.
So sudo IP tables, depending on who you are. And that will list all the rules. Probably you're going to find one of those rules saying that your IP has been banned. You can just drop it. So just IP tables dash help or something. You'll see how to drop it. It's quite simple. And once you've dropped it, that's it. Now you're allowed.
Now you're allowed back in again. Can you whitelist yourself and be like, okay, am I always okay?
You can whitelist yourself depending on the instances and the rules that you have on your connection, maybe harder or easier. One of the things that you can do is just say, this is my IP. Don't ever block this IP.
Yep.
And then you're good.
Okay. That sounds great. All right, cool. Good to know. If I'm ever locked out of one of my own machines, now I know what the problem could be.
Yeah, it's good to know. Yeah.
Great. All right, great. So, finishing off, why don't we just recap with what events we have coming up? If people want to come and talk to us or want to talk about Google Cloud Platform, where we'll be. So, Francesc, where are you going to be headed in the next little while?
So, I'm going to be... So, there's GCP Next in Paris that it's happening like very, very soon.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Wonderful.
Then, in November, I will be in Oradev in Malmo. Then, I will go to Paris for .go. It's a Go conference. Then I will go to, what's the name? DevOps in Antwerp in Belgium. We're going to have a huge, huge team there. I think we're going to be like five or six of Google.
Sounds like that's going to be a good event.
That's going to be, that's going to be lots of fun. And then after that, the week after that, I'm going to Barcelona, not for holidays this time, even though I have some, but because there's DockerCon Europe.
Very good.
Yep.
Okay, great. So I will be, in November, I will be at FutureStack, the New Relic conference.
Nice.
Super excited about that because Steve Wozniak will be keynoting.
Oh, wow.
I'm on the speaker page with Steve Wozniak. That made me pretty happy. And as I mentioned in the last episode, I will be at ClojureConf in November as well.
Nice.
Talking about some container stuff and development environments, which should be lots and lots of fun.
Sounds cool. So yeah, if you are anywhere around there and you get the chance, come say hi.
Yeah, love to speak to everyone.
Yeah, send us a message on Twitter or through an email. So just in case, let's remember that. So our website is gcppodcast.com.
Yep.
Twitter, it's at gcppodcast.
Yep.
Google Plus is google.com/+gcppodcast. What else? I'm forgetting something. Reddit. It's r/GCPpodcast. And our email is hello@GCPpodcast. I think that's it. Yeah,
that's it. I think that's it. That seems like everything. All right. Well, it was great to chat with you once again, Francesc.
Yeah. And talk to you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.